Our teaching today is on UFOs and extraterrestrial aliens. Who or what are they?
They come from Hollywood.
A lot of them do. So how many of you have actually read this book? Okay. It's Lights in the Sky and Little Green Men. Okay, it's Hugh's book. So we're not going to be covering that information. We're going to cover something actually that's brand new. The data has just come out because I found it. So, and if you're listening online, you're going to want to get the slides because there are lots of pictures and graphics, and I'm not going to necessarily cover everything with vocals because you can see stuff. So if you're online, you want to make sure you get the slides from the website. Okay, so first we're going to start with a little video excerpt. This is Alien Autopsy. Has everybody seen this?
Yeah.
Okay, so this actually came out, could have been 30 years ago or something. And the best part of the autopsy is when they open up the chest cavity, the heart is just sitting right on top of everything. There's no ribs or anything. And they just pull the heart off, and, you know, it's really stupid. But
real quick, look at the phone. You see the wire on it? This was supposed to have been done in the late 40s. They did not have curly wires.
Okay.
That's something I know.
Okay. So Dr. Ross has gone into a lot of information on the probability of the existence of planets to house intelligent life. And as you know from his data, there's not really a lot of probability there. but I'm going to go at a different viewpoint. We're going to assume that aliens do exist. But the question is, you know, if they do exist, can they actually travel from where they are to where we are? And so Frank Drake invented this equation called the Drake equation, and it estimates the number of civilizations within the galaxy. And the equation uses variables such as star formation rate, suitable stars, Earth-like planets, evolution of life, and intelligent beings. So some of these factors are really well known, so we know what the values are. And other factors are pretty much speculation. So there's lots of different values that you'll find regarding the Drake equation. For example, Wikipedia gives an estimate of 10 advanced civilizations per galaxy. Jim Plaxo gives an estimate of 1. If you look at other places on the web, you'll find estimates anywhere from thousands to millions. They're just all over the place. But let's take an optimistic estimate of 150 civilizations in our galaxy. The average distance between the civilizations is 2,000 light years. Okay, so that's a pretty long distance to go. Even if you're going at the speed of light, you know, that's going to take 2,000 years minimum. So the first thing we're going to look at is we're going to look at the question.
The way you phrased that, you
know. Okay. But you know, let's be direct about this. So
you should read that for people listening. What do you say?
Okay. Well, the subtitle of the slide is Why Star Trek and Star Wars Are Stupid.
And the way that is because I can't watch a show that violates the laws of physics every 5 minutes. Right.
Okay. So we're going to look at some of the problems with interstellar space travel. And first, we're going to have a video excerpt.
Crazy to follow us, wouldn't they?
You don't have to do this so fast.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
So we see that running into an asteroid is probably not a good thing. But actually, it's much worse than that. And according to Frank Drake, running into even a very small object results in an energy release equivalent to a nuclear bomb blast. Okay? So how do we get to this? We're actually going to use this equation. And if you take this equation and you plot it on the graph, you'll end up with this. And over here at the speed of light, you actually do get the energy equivalent of a nuclear bomb blast. And the amount of mass that will produce this much energy on collision is this big. Okay, it's a little tiny pebble. Okay, and you know, when this thing hits a spacecraft at the velocity of light, it's not like an atomic bomb where it's spread out over a wide area. It's going to hit that one little area with the force of a nuclear bomb blast. Okay, that's probably not going to be good. And actually, you know, you could even have a smaller particle, probably even like a little grain of sand hitting a spacecraft traveling at the speed of light is going to do really major damage. Yes?
Rich, I've been told that when the space shuttle enters the atmosphere at Mach 23, an olive pit would destroy it.
That could very well be, because it doesn't have a lot of shielding. You know, it has those tiles, but, you know, if the tile gets knocked off, then they're in big trouble.
I did the calculations. 1% of the speed of the light is pretty good to destroy just about any craft we've made so far of any size motive to dust.
Probably, yeah. So there's a big problem with hitting things, and they don't have to be as big as asteroids. Yet.
Yeah, what happens to shorten the life of our satellites that we have, communications, whatever, outer space, obviously they unfold huge solar panels for power, and typically within a couple of years, a grain of sand will hit the solar panel, it puts a hole the size of a quarter in it.
Yeah, they have lots of holes and stuff.
When that grain of sand hits our atmosphere, that's what produces falling stars. And the bigger the street, the bigger the path of the grain of sand is.
Yeah. So that was problem number one. Now we have another problem, and our second problem involves electromagnetic radiation. So this is a pictogram of the different forms of electromagnetic radiation, and they have different wavelengths and different energy components. So if we go to the far left, we have the waves that are long wavelength, low energy, and those are the radio waves. So radio waves have a wavelength of like the length of a football field. Okay, as we move along the electromagnetic spectrum, we'll end up at the visible spectrum. Okay, so that's the light that you can see, and it's the light that has enough energy to drive photosynthesis. So here we have, at this point, the wavelength of the light is in the nanometer range, which is subcellular size. So it's sort of small. As we continue to the right, we end up with UV, and UV is a more energetic. So down on this end of the range, we have shorter wavelength, high energy electromagnetic radiation. So the UV has enough energy to actually damage DNA. Okay, that's why you don't want to sit out in the sun and get baked by the UV coming down. Now, as we continue to the right, we end up at X-rays and gamma rays. And these are highly energetic electromagnetic radiation, and their wavelengths are on the scale of atomic scale. So they're really short wavelengths, high energy. So we're going to look at the question of what happens when we're traveling towards a light source near the speed of light. So here's our light source, and we have this wave. And then we're in our rocket ship, and we're going close to the speed of light. Now, how fast is the light coming towards us if we're traveling close to the speed of light? Is it twice the speed of light? Okay, it's exactly the same. Okay, this is relativity. The speed of light never changes. Doesn't matter which direction you're going, if you're going towards it, if you're going away from it. The only thing that happens is if you're going towards the light source, the waves get compressed. Okay, so they have shorter wavelength, higher energy, and if you get to the point that you're like 99% the speed of light. What happens is that those UV rays from your astronomical sources, those turn into X-rays. That's not good. Okay, and if you continue going up towards the speed of light, eventually all of these wavelengths of light will be compressed, they'll be blue shifted, until they're all gamma rays. Gamma rays are not good for space travel. Okay, so this fact alone is going to prevent you from ever going to the speed of light, because all the wavelengths of light coming towards you are going to be blue shifted into the lethal range of energies. Okay. Probably didn't know that, did you?
Yeah,
put on your shields.
From your crystals.
Okay. Now, actually, the worst problem, you know, that's a really bad problem, but there's another problem that's even much worse than that. And the other problem is energy, okay? So accelerating up to relativistic speeds takes a huge amount of energy. And the equation we use, this is a variation of E equals mc squared. Okay, we're just counting for the percentage of the speed of light here. And if you take this equation and you plot on a scale, you'll get this, okay? So here we have the energy in joules on the x-axis and the speed of light on the y-axis. And we get this curve. Now, down here at 90% of the speed of light, it requires 5 times 10 to the 22nd joules of energy. How much energy is that? That's the equivalent amount of energy contained in all the fossil fuels in the entire world. That's a fair amount, isn't it?
Okay. Discovered and undiscovered.
Right. And that is only to propel a spaceship the size of the space shuttle, which is, that's a pretty small spaceship. You know, how many aliens are you going to cram into there? It's not very many. But let's assume that the aliens have advanced technology. Let's say that they have a 100% efficient fusion reactor. So they're going to be able to convert all of the mass directly into energy. How much mass would that take? It turns out that even with a 100% nuclear fusion reactor, which doesn't exist, it would require twice the mass of the spaceship just to get to 90% of the speed of light. Okay, so now you have twice the mass, but you have to add that into the spaceship. So now you have 3 times the mass, so you're going to need 3 times the amount of fuel, and it just keeps going up. Okay, and that's only one direction. Let's say you're going off into space, and you actually want to stop somewhere. Okay, what do you need? How much energy do you need? The same amount of energy. That's crazy. Okay, so now we need, you know, we need at least twice as much that energy, which we couldn't get anyway. And, you know, let's say you want to actually go home. Okay, so if you want to go home, you have to do the same thing over again. So that's 4 times the amount of energy, which is a ridiculous amount of energy. So this shows you that you can never go the speed of light, or even 90% of the speed of light. You can never get there because it's way too much energy.
Could the aliens not have a totally different set of physics, though, to get to us?
Not in our universe, they can't.
We've already demonstrated that because of telescopes. We've seen that the laws of physics are the same and everywhere in the universe, wherever you go, stars burn the same, gravity is there.
So
the Bible declares that, too. Obviously, the laws of physics are fixed. They don't change.
So as long as the aliens come from our universe, they're going to have to use our laws of physics. They're not going to be able to invent their own. Okay, but
the laws that they use, of course, is this warp drive travel going faster than the speed of light.
Oh, you mean this?
Yeah,
okay, let's do this. So so in 1994, there was this theoretical physicist Miguel Alcubierre, who devised this theoretical method of traveling at warp speed. So how did he do this? He did it through math, okay, and he also did it through the invention of new kinds of matter. So So what it does is this warp drive, it creates a it distorts the fabric of space. So it's like an anti-gravity type thing where it distorts space in front of the vessel to be shorter and space behind the vessel to be longer. But it does this with antimatter. Okay. And so other physicists have looked at his equation, and it turns out that it has a fairly large energy requirement. So you would need minus 10 to the 64 kilograms of antimatter to transport a small spaceship across the Milky Way galaxy using this kind of method. Now, how many kilograms is in the universe? There's less than that. Okay, so this could be a little problem. Just a little problem. Okay, so, and there are also other problems with this kind of warp drive, because essentially, you know, you can create this field, but you're not going to be able to really control it, because you can't actually do anything to the front of the bubble. You can't make it, you know, go where you want it to go. So it's not going to be really too steerable, which could be a problem. And the other thing is that we have this Hawking radiation problem. So all of these fields and stuff, they're distorting space, and other physicists have calculated that you're going to get some kind of Hawking radiation, which is going to inundate inside the field. So that wouldn't be good for the travelers. And there's yet another problem. When you actually decelerate, it produces a whole bunch of energetic particles, and it's going to blast away anything that's in front of you. So you never want to stop near something. Okay, so you know, this kind of warp drive, you know, it's possible according to the math, but in reality, you know, it's never going to happen.
But do a lot of people believe that?
Oh, of course, all the UFO people believe this. You know, they've seen the videos. You know, warp drives. You
Star
just
Wars is really
right.
Star Wars is not real, but Star Trek is.
Yes, it's all Star Trek. Okay, so let's summarize up to this point. So we know that the civilizations are spaced at least 2,000 light years apart, and we also know that we can't go the speed of light. So we know that it's going to take, you know, these aliens, it's going to take them tens to hundreds of thousands of years to go from where they are to where we are. So it seems really unlikely that these aliens are actually real beings from this universe. Okay, now, the vast majority of UFO sightings are natural phenomena that tend to be misinterpreted. So, for example, there were these airline pilots in the Northwest, and whenever they flew up there, they were constantly seeing these UFOs, and they thought, well, the next time we're going to see them, we're going to document it. So they took their video camera, and they saw the UFO, and they zoomed in on it, and it was a string of pelicans. So, you know, with the visual eye, you're not going to necessarily know exactly what you're seeing. It might look like a UFO, but it's probably something else. So we're going to briefly go into the history of UFOs. And essentially, there were no UFO sightings before the 20th century. And the official UFO era began on June 24th, 1947. And this is pilot Kenneth Arnold saw a series of objects up in Washington, and he described that they flew erratic like a floss, like a saucer if you skip it across the water. And the Chicago Sun picked up the story, citing the UFOs as flying saucers. So that's the original flying saucer thing. And Arnold reported his sighting to the Air Force, who was in charge of investigating UFO sightings at that time. And this is the picture that he drew of his saucer. But then a few years later, when his book came out, it turned into that. So it looks much better now. So all of this stuff happened relatively quickly. So Roswell, actually, that 2 weeks later, on July 8th, in Roswell, it was reported in the Roswell Daily Record that a flying saucer had crashed in the desert. The problem with the story, and most people don't know this, is that the saucer, quotes, had been discovered by a rancher on June 14th. So that's nearly 2 weeks before Arnold's UFO sighting. But he didn't report it until after Arnold's UFO sighting. They thought, oh, this will be good. So he reported it, and then it made the story in the news and everything. Okay, but the story of the Roswell crash was more or less forgotten until the 1970s when the UFO enthusiast resurrected it. Okay, and by that point, the saucer had contained aliens, either dead or alive, and they were taken to the Area 51. They were all dissected and whatever. Okay, but the question is, if you saw a saucer with dead aliens or live aliens in it, would you wait 3 weeks to report it? I don't think so. And this is actually what they found. And it was about 5 pounds of aluminum, balsa wood, and tape. You know, it was a weather balloon, and it was actually carrying, though, a top-secret payload for detecting nuclear explosions. So the Air Force was sort of, you know, they wanted to be quiet about it because they didn't want, you know, all that stuff to get out. So they were sort of trying to redirect. And this is the famous Anzo Borrego saucer that crashed in 2011. I actually photographed this one myself. Okay, and this is the result of another errant UFO flight that crashed into a local electronics store. It's amazing how badly they fly, considering how advanced their technology is. Okay, and this is actually a German saucer from World War II, and the Air Force was actually attempting to build a saucer. And they got it off the ground, but it had major stability problems. And here's another Air Force saucer. And here's another one. I mean, look at this. Do you believe that they had this? Maybe not. Okay, so you know, the moral of this is that a lot of these saucers are not real. You know, I can make saucers. Anybody can make saucers.
Is there an advantage to the saucer shape that you can understand at all?
I think there's a lot of disadvantages to the shape, other than it's very aerodynamic. But I think in terms of stability and stuff, right. I mean, how would you make it not flip over? That was the problem with the Air Force saucer. You know, they got it, as soon as it got 4 feet off the ground, it started doing bad things. You still have to get it.
There is an answer. The reason the saucer is a good shape because it resembles Venus and, you know, lights off the city and all the other things reflect into the sky that looks round.
Richard?
Yes.
It seems like for the last 20 years, I'll be quick. Saucers have evolved into triangles. They're seeing a lot of triangles now. You know,
they're seeing triangles and cigars and all kinds of things, but
triangles are real popular.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Okay, so crop circles. Everybody knows about the crop circles. Everybody heard the story? Okay, it's pretty entertaining. but here are some of the better examples. And you know, at the time these came out, yes, it was. The people who liked them said that they were messages from alien beings, but we have here a short video clip from the BBC explaining exactly what happened here.
Sir Terence Maiden was convinced he had the answer. The circles are made by a spinning mass of air that comes down very hard and impacts with the crop. In addition, this air is electrified, so this leaves electromagnetic effects behind. And these extra effects, besides aerodynamic ones, probably account for the rings and those funny claws which angled out some of the circles. How exactly does Doug make his circle? Well, it involves a lot of footwork and a wooden plank. Take a bearing. Any landmark will do, so you can make straight lines. And even the greenest novice can turn a trampled-down strip into a wide corridor. And circle, any size you like, just hold tight. Oh, and in case you're wondering, we had the farmer's permission to make this design in his field.
I said to one researcher, I said, well, I'm a wildlife sound recorder, so I travel around quite a bit. I said, if I spot any circles, would you like me to let you know? He said, I would. So I used to, after we did a circle, we used to ring him up in the morning and say, there's one at so-and-so.
This is the design the crop circle artist from London gave us before they started work. So have they achieved their aim? Well, judge for yourself.
Okay, so so actually, in the last part of that, these guys who created the crop circles had this bet with the UFO guys, saying that, you know, they could make this crop circle at night, a really giant one, and they would photograph it with their night vision cameras and prove that they could do it. And they did win the bet, but still there are people that believe that these crop circles are made by aliens.
It is reported that there's other kinds of evidence at these sites, like radiation or burn mark or something like that.
Yeah, but that, they're all stupid.
It's all bogus?
It's all bogus, yes. They just, if you're looking for stuff, you'll find it, I guess.
One other thing that I mentioned is there are lots of places where they grow crops in circles because it's easier to water them. They have a just from a centering point.
Right,
well,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
How are you doing on Rick time, Rich? I want to make sure you get to the end.
We're going to get there, hopefully, but we're going to have to hurry up. Okay, so actually, UFO abductees, they're in here. So I'm not going to cover this, but they're essentially, they're weird people. Okay, but what about, the question is, what about the regular people? And, you know, because, you know, a lot, the people who see UFOs aren't necessarily, you know, they aren't really weird necessarily, but they do see them. And the question is, you know, do they have any kind of characteristic that differentiates them from the rest of us who never see these things? And actually, I got interested in this topic because I got an email from Ted about this article in The Atlantic, and its conclusion was that UFO sightings were mostly drunk people in the West, okay, which is an interesting title. And they get this from this graph here. And essentially what we see is there are very few sightings during sleeping hours or working hours, and there's a whole bunch of sightings in what are called drinking hours, which are the times between dinner and going to bed. Okay, so that's where the drinking part comes from. And the other part comes from here. So if you look at this map, what they've done is they've categorized the UFO sightings frequency by state. So they have number of sightings per 100,000 individuals. So it's all been normalized on population. And what you see is there are a lot of sightings in the West. Okay, those are the dark blue ones as opposed to the light blue. But then they didn't happen to notice that there are also a bunch of sightings up in the Northeast. Now, this middle part of the country, is there anything about that middle part of the country that...
Bible Belt.
Bible Belt. Okay. So this is our Bible Belt area. So maybe this maybe this has more truth than we really think. So the hypothesis is that unbelievers are seeing UFOs because demons are trying to convince them, okay? And the reason why they don't go after Christians is because we have the Spirit of God and we have spiritual discernment and we're told to test the spirits. So we're not going to be quite fooled as easily. However, the unbelievers don't have the spiritual discernment and they can't spiritually appraise things such as UFO sightings. They're going to assume they're real. Okay, so we want to test this hypothesis. Most of the data that I'm going to show you from the rest of this talk is from the National UFO Reporting Center. Okay, so they've actually been keeping track of UFO sightings since 1974. They have a hotline and they have a website, and actually they publish their data online. So I downloaded their data, and I've combined it with some other data to come up with some really interesting ideas. No, these are just taking sightings, and you know they make money because they sell videos and stuff. But okay, so but if we look at the number of sightings over time, we can see that there's a huge increase in the number of sightings since 1995. And if we look at the number of individuals with no religious preference, we'll also see that that number has also increased dramatically since about that time. Now there is some complication in here, because you know in the 90s, that's when the internet started, cell phones and stuff. So you're probably going to get more reporting just as a function of technology. So this data isn't really well grounded, but it gives us a hint that there might be something happening here. Okay, so now what we're going to do is we're actually going to use some statistical tests to look at data and see how it's correlations. Has anybody here taken a course in statistics? Oh, lots of people. Excellent. Really good. Okay. So this quote has been attributed to British Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli from the 19th century, and he said, "There are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics." Okay. So Mark Twain popularized this quote, but this is an anti-science quote, because science uses statistics in every single publication. If you do not use statistics, you will not be published. Okay? So statistics really are good, and they're not in the other category. Okay, so how does this work? So in any kind of population, you'll have a range of values. So most of the people will line up somewhere in the middle of a curve. And then there'll be people on the edges. So like there'll be like if you're looking at like height, you'll have like tall people and you'll have shorter people, and you know they'll fall on either ends. So this is called a normal distribution. Yes, the bell curve. And 95% will fall within this range, and this is considered like the normal range sort of. But you'll end up with like 2.5% on the other sides, and these ones, by the standards of science, these are considered significantly different. Okay, so you'll end up with a probability value, and it's called a p-value. So the p-value of 0.05 is considered significant. That's the standard p-value for significance. So what it means is that there's a 5% chance that the result could have happened by chance. Okay, so there's a 95% chance that the result is real. Okay, that's basically how science defines real data versus bogus data. Okay, and so you can get things like two populations. You have population one and population two, and you know the means will be different, but there's some overlap there. Okay, statistics can tell you whether or not those two populations are different or whether they're the same, and it mostly depends upon the number of values that you have in doing your test. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at correlations. So here we have some values. We have some x values and some y values. And we're going to take these and we're going to plot them. And when we plot them on this graph, there are our values, they're plotted, and we can draw a straight line through these values. Okay. Now, the line goes through each of the points. Okay, what does that tell you? Is this a good correlation or a bad correlation? Okay, so this is a very high correlation. And actually you can calculate what's called a correlation coefficient. And the R value, the correlation coefficient, if it's equal to 1, 1 is the maximum value you can get. That's the highest number you can get for a correlation coefficient. Now, here's some other values. And we're going to plot these values. And you can see these values probably, they're probably not related to each other, right? Because we end up with this line, okay? So if a line is absolutely flat, that means that there's no correlation. And your correlation coefficient will be close to zero. So a value of zero is a perfectly uncorrelated set of data. Okay, so this is all you need to know, other than we're going to calculate what's called a Pearson's correlation. And we use this formula to calculate it, but since we scientists are lazy, we use Microsoft Excel and plug it into there. And it, magically, the data comes out. So that's exactly what I've done. And also from this value, you can get a p-value, the probability value, and that comes from this equation. But we put it into Excel. It's a little more complicated, but we can handle this. So we do a t-distribution. We end up with a probability value. And we're looking for values that have a probability value of less than 0.05. Okay, so now we're going to look at our data. So our hypothesis is that unbelievers see more UFOs than believers. Okay, now the problem is there is no direct data. Okay, the people who do the UFO reporting collection, they don't ask who these people are. They don't ask, you know, what do you believe? They could care less. They're just getting the data. So we don't have any direct data. But we do have indirect data. And the indirect data is the data by state. Okay, so what we've done here is we've taken the data on percent with no religion. That comes from Gallup. And we've taken the UFO sightings per 100,000. That comes from the National UFO Reporting Center. And we plotted this data together, and we end up with this curve. Okay, so you can see this is a line. It's going straight up. Okay, it has an R value of 0.75, which is pretty good. And it has a p-value of 1.89 times 10 to the minus 10. 10 to the minus 10. So that's the probability of this result happening by chance is less than 1 in 20 billion. Okay, so this is a pretty nice correlation, right? Okay, so there we have a correlation between the number of unbelievers and UFO sightings. Now, let's say we're going to plot this, only we're going to look at a correlation between believers and UFO sightings. What do you expect the curve to look like? It's going to be the opposite, okay? And, okay, so this is based on religiosity score, again from Gallup, and we can see the curve is going in the opposite direction. The p-value is 3.5 times 10 to the minus 5, which is still a really, really good p-value. And then I decided to plot another value, which is weekly church attendance, right?
Yep.
And it's the same thing. We have a nice negative correlation. P-value is at 10 to the minus 6.
So before you were talking about religiosity, which I presume includes Buddhists and Islam and all that, right?
The correlation
coefficient here is worse than it is for all religions, if that's correct. The religiosity includes all religions, and this is just church.
Yes. So this one actually has a better p-value than the other one, but they're both highly significant. You know, 10 to 10 to the minus 6 is crazy.
But religiosity does include all religions.
It does include all religions, but for practical purposes in the United States, it means Christian. Because the other religions are much smaller than Christianity.
Really? That,
so,
that,
yes, really. Yeah.
I know this is a really stupid question, but this graph looks a lot different from the first graph of no religion.
Well, it's going the opposite direction, which you'd expect.
Oh, opposite direction. That's
right.
But what confused me was the high p-value.
Okay, that's a low p-value.
That's a low p-value.
Okay, because it's 10 to the minus.
Rich, I have to ask again, how are we doing on time? I'd like to see the answer to the conclusion.
We're doing fine. We're gonna kick through this stuff now. So we don't have that much to go. So why are UFO sightings higher in the West? Okay. So So this is looking at longitude, and so you can see that, you know, the ones that are towards the west, they're higher sightings. We're getting a correlation. It's not as good as the religious correlations, but what are the states down here? What are the low states? Those are Bible Belt. Okay, so this really isn't a correlation between West. This is a correlation of Bible Belt states in the Southwest or Southeast. Yeah. And you can see the heathens up in the Northeast are all up there. They're way off the curve. So, you know, they're messing it up as far as East West goes. Okay. Then if you look at latitude, of course, latitude is north-south, and where's the Bible Belt? It's in the south, so you're going to get this correlation where, you know, people in the north are going to be seeing more UFOs, okay? So this fits, it still fits with the religious data because all of these states down here, these are Bible Belt states with the low UFO sightings.
Washington are zoned out on all of them.
They are zoned out. Okay. Racial and ethnic correlations. Do we expect to find any? Okay. And so these are Caucasians, and you could add to your list of mostly drunk people in the West to mostly white drunk people in the West. Okay. But okay. But you'll notice the p-value is at 0.049. So it's barely significant. So essentially, you know, there probably isn't a racial component here. And this is for Hispanics, and that's totally flat. So there's nothing going on with the Hispanics or anything. Here's for African Americans. Now this one is highly significant. And the African Americans see fewer UFOs than everybody else. Why is that? What are these states down here? Those are Bible Belt. Okay, that's where the African Americans mostly live. That's why this correlation is significant. Okay, and here's Asians. There's no correlation between being Asian and seeing UFOs.
What about Native Americans?
Oh, I didn't run that one, but I think it was zero also, because there basically aren't very many of those in the U.S. So there's, you know, educational attainment. What do we think? Do we think there's going to be any kind of correlations between education and attainment? Okay. What do we think? Is it going to be educated are going to see more? Or uneducated? Okay. Everybody seems to disagree. Okay. So this is a correlation with those who have not completed the high school dropouts. And it's a negative correlation. Okay? So
they don't see them.
But where are people dropping out? And the Bible Belt. Okay. So there is a negative correlation, but most of the dropouts are in the South, and so that's why there is this correlation, and it's negative. Now, if we look at high school grads, we actually end up with a positive correlation. Okay? That's because, you know, here we have the Bible Belt down here, and we have the unreligious states over there. Okay, So, you know, a little learning is a dangerous thing. That's the end result of that. Okay, so here are people with a college, which a bachelor's degree. There's no correlation here at all. No correlation. Okay, and people who have an advanced degree, a master's or PhD, there's no correlation here either. Okay, but essentially, people who believe that spaceships are UFOs, they tend to be non-degree people, whereas the people with college degrees tend to be more skeptical of UFOs. So not too exciting. But now we have some miscellaneous correlations, because whenever you do correlations, it's always good to have some negative controls. So I'm going to throw in some negative controls here, and we can see things that really don't make a difference. Okay, so this is the first one. This is per capita income. Again, p-value is not significant. There's no correlation between UFO sightings and per capita income. There's no correlation between age. It's not significant. But the percent that are underemployed, There's no correlation. And percent of people who work for the government. Now, you would think that there'd be a correlation here, but there isn't. Okay, and those that lean towards the Democratic Party, there's no correlation here either. Okay, so here's our summary of all of these correlations, and what we see is, of course, the strongest correlation with the lowest p-value, 10 to the minus 10, is with no religion. Okay, the next stronger correlations are those who actually believe, the believers, you know, either being religious or attending church. That's a pretty strong negative correlation. We have correlations that are between African Americans and those who don't go to high school or don't complete high school, and we found that those were correlated simply because they're more in the southeastern portion of the U.S.
What about the correlation between celebrities?
Yeah, not very many of those. Although you would think so. And again, the correlation between longitude and latitude, those are also religious correlations because all the data is being driven by people in the southeast. And again, we have all of these miscellaneous parameters that we attempted to do correlations with, and there are no correlations there. So the end result is that our strongest correlation is with no religion, which confirms the hypothesis that this is some kind of demonic or spiritual component. Okay, so this is the first time this data has been presented anywhere. So you're the first.
You put this together, right?
I put this together. Yes, it was all on Ted's inspiration for you know. The data with the states. Once I knew that there was state data, I knew I could do these correlations. Okay. We're on the very last slide. Okay. Well, you know, there is all the data on you know the quality of the star and the
and that's in Hughes' book.
Right. That's all in Hughes' book. So that's old data. This is new data. Okay, so number one thing is, you know, if aliens actually existed, you know, we know that they can't go the speed of light. They actually can't get here, you know. So the probability is that they're not real. Yes, spirit travel. So, and we believe that the demons want to convince unbelievers that UFOs are real, and we show that the UFO sightings are highly correlated with the percentage of unbelievers in a state. Okay, so that's it, and that's the end.
So the state of Washington with Microsoft and Boeing and they're off the charts.
What's
there,
up
right?
With that? I don't know.
They're all stoned.
Yes.
I think you might have presented a rundown a long time ago, but one psychologist, psychotherapist who had many, many clients, and among those that saw UFOs, he became a Christian in his process, and he reinvestigated over 50 of them, and he had a 98th percentile of people that had some sort of occult activity together with the UFOs.
So those are people who decided them, or people who were abducted, or what?
Well, high across the gamut. They had a very high level 3 and 4 getting encounter and or abduction,
uh-huh.
With things like Ouija board being probably number 1.
Yeah. But well, actually, you know, if you look in here, Hugh has a lot of information on that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's anecdotal, but there's a fair amount in here.
You know, flying saucers, you know, became popular on old-time radio. I listen to old-time radio, and there are a lot of science fiction programs like X-1, Dimension X, and the science fiction children's program Space Patrol. You remember that one?
There are lots of programs that have encouraged this UFO belief. Yes, Mara.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that when no one ever saw these until 1970.
centers on when we could send people off and they could check out places like
Right. Actually, Hugh mentions that in here. He actually says that you know there's a correlation between technology and UFOs. So prior to the 20th century, they weren't UFOs. They were other kinds of apparitions. And now that we you know as soon as we get rocket technology and jets and stuff in World War II, then right after that we get these UFOs that are flying around. Okay, and they're probably going to become more sophisticated as time goes on.
But also, I heard the other night on the O'Reilly Factor, they had NASA says that they will in the next 10 years find alien life. And like that.
Okay, well, they are never going to find alien life because, you know, you can't, we don't have the technology to even determine for sure if there's water in a lot of places. You know, detecting actual presence of life is going to be really, really dicey for a fair amount of time.
But it's a good campaign to get astronauts.
Well, yeah, it keeps the money flowing. Yeah. Keeps the money flowing.
Bingo.
For NASA, I think.
For warp drive discussion, you were... it sounded to me like they're talking about a description of something that allowed you to easily get up close to the speed of light, but not go past it.
Actually,
Star Wars and everything talk about jumping.
No, actually, this actually does go beyond the speed of light, and they in theory it could go you know like 10 times the speed of light or something.
But it goes through the speed of light to get there. In other words, you go up.
No, it has nothing to do with the speed of light because you're warping space. Through this gravity warp, so yeah, so it's right. So it doesn't actually violate the laws of physics, but it requires this stuff that basically doesn't exist. So you know, they do talk about it, but you know we don't know where the wormholes are, and we don't know what happened when we went into them. But chances are that it wouldn't be good. You know, where are you going to end up?
You had so much fun doing this, didn't you?
It was fun.
Radio. I remember there on the radio show, Space Patrol, there was an instrument called Spaceophone, which I think led to the invention of the cell phone.
Okay, well, I'm going to close in prayer, and then I'm going to revise my announcement. It looks like Rich Deem actually has brought enough food to feed the entire class, so if you didn't bring food on behalf of Rich Deem and a few other people that look like they brought a lot more than their share of food, if you didn't bring any food, there looks like there's plenty of here, so you're welcome to stay for that. So I'm going to pray, and we'll have about maybe just a 10-minute break here for me to get the room ready and for those people that brought their food to bring it out, and then I'll come back to the microphone and have somebody pray for our food and fellowship time. Dear Lord, we pray very thankful for Rich Deem and for just the time and the effort and the care he's put into this presentation. So very thankful for his outreach, Lord. Rich won't know the number of people that he planted seeds to help them to find you and to find truth, Lord, until he gets into heaven, Lord. So very thankful for Rich and for his family, Lord, and just pray that you would continue to give Rich and his family an extra dose of grace and mercy. They're just so inspiring to me, Lord, and just the amount of pain and suffering they've had in their life, and yet they're so very faithful and their love and their care for you, Lord. So I pray that you again would just pour out your mercy on Rich and his wife and his sons, Lord, and so very thankful for the time that they've given to just help so many people with so many issues that we deal with.